2024 was either a fantastic year or an awful year, depending on where you put your bets. A little bit like had you entered the casino and decided to play red or black. If you'd played the one that had done well, you'd have been smiling all the way home. The other one would have taken you to a position where maybe you'd have to change your address. We're going to talk about 2024 and this massive variance in performances from various asset classes with David Bacher. David is the Chief Investment Officer of Corient Capital, and we talk every month about what happened in the previous month. This time, though, we're looking at the whole year. This being January, of course, we are looking back, David. And I guess before we kick off, you got to give us your sense. I don't want a forecast. Anybody who forecasts in this day and age about where asset prices are going is either a charlatan or a fool, because we don't know. We just don't know where next week's going, let alone the whole year. But what is your gut feeling about 2025, good, bad, or ugly?
Sure, I think you might accuse me of sitting on the fence. What I do know is that we are in for a year of market turbulence. Trump's unpredictable decision-making means headlines, risks will be constant. So from a current perspective, you know, you don't have to swing at every pitch. We think this year you probably should favor a more balanced approach and investing in a more diversified manner. So, you know, investors should favor stability over high-risk bets, companies and asset classes with solid total return potential. That means dividends as well as capital appreciation should be your focus. So I would say that there's a lot of risks out there. Unlike last year where we thought South African assets were cheap, we think it's, you know, a more balanced approach and a little bit more of a defensive approach is probably the way to play 2025.
I love the holidays because I get to catch up on all those podcasts I wanted to listen to. And amongst the one that I listened to three times was the interview by the founder of Stripe, of Charlie Munger. One of the last interviews that Charlie Munger did before he passed away. It's just golden, this whole thing. There's so much wisdom in it. But the one thing that emphasized the success of Munger and his business partner, Warren Buffett, is he says that we never went for the spectacular. We always did what made sense. We kept just making sure that we didn't step on landmines, just kept things going straight in the same direction, then let the eighth wonder of the world, compound interest or compound returns, take care of it. Sounds to me like that's going to be the approach that will favor or support you best in the year ahead.
Correct. People forget how important things like dividends are and what a significant role that dividends have on long-term equity returns. And if you look at today's S&P 500, the dividend yield is about 1.3% compared to the US 10-year yield of 4.6%. This spread is unsustainable. So, you know, we think that something has to give. Either, you know, share prices will need to come back a bit, or there needs to be a fall in bond yields. So that's why, as I started with my answer, I think looking at asset classes that give you yield and dividends, as opposed to just thinking what's been a meteoric rise in US equity markets, will continue.
David, let's get into the presentation that you put together and always do put together for us. Thank you to you and your team. It's one of the highlights for many in the business community to see how you guys have actually put the images that you've decided to use. We're talking here about the best and the worst for 2024. And the thing that came out to me was, from a South Africa versus rest of the world perspective, if you'd got your asset classes wrong in South Africa, and in other words, SA versus rest of the world in bonds, if you'd gone with South African bonds, you'd have done great. Rest of the world bonds, you'd have done awfully. And it was similar in property, and it was similar in the equities as well. And the SA property market was an absolute outperformer, 25% up in 2024. And global property, on the other hand, was one of the worst performers. And this is in US dollars, was only 1% up. Explain the divergence, if you would.
Yeah, well, you know, firstly, 2024, there was a lot of political shifts that had profound impacts on financial markets. So if you look at this, you know, the shifts in South Africa, obviously the fact that we had a very favorable political outcome was very good for our bond markets and our expectations of future interest rates. That meant a huge rally in terms of interest rate sensitive shares and bonds in South Africa. So that was a reason why SA property and our property market did really, really well. But if you look at what happened in America, where, you know, inflation hasn't been under control and interest rates and long-term interest rates are at almost a 30-year, I think, at all-time highs for some time, that has the opposite effect on their interest rate shares, such as their global property. So I think very much the difference is because of our very positive political outcome, and the risk of South Africa really going down the wrong road has seemed to have diminished.
But isn't that interesting? When we had the government of national unity, most commentators were saying, oh, you can buy South African shares. But actually what they should have been saying is you should buy South African bonds and property.
Well, I think it depends on which South African shares, because if you look and later in the presentation, you'll see all those interest rate sensitive shares actually did phenomenally well. You had retail shares really, you know, some of them did 60% and a lot of them more than 30%. So very much in the South African market, you always have this divergence between South African interest rate sensitive shares and your more dual listed rand sensitive shares. And they always seem to be on the other side because they do have different and on most occasions opposing drivers.
Global equities were up by 17.5%, SA bonds up 13.6%. And if you look at the other end of the scale, SA equities massively underperformed global equities. Global bonds actually fell in value by 3% as against that excellent performance for South African bonds. And we mentioned property a little earlier. Again, I guess this is to do with having to make your bets in the right way.
Correct. And the South African performance of 10% in US dollars, you know, obviously compared to the MSCI and the world, looks like it undershot, and it did, but primarily because the US remained so strong and China was strong. But if you compare the South African market to other emerging markets, more markets that are similar to us in terms of let's say, Brazil or Mexico, etc., you know, our markets did actually perform reasonably well. There were a lot of headwinds to emerging markets, and in the backdrop of that, you know, a 10% return in US dollars with a reasonably stable currency, you know, it's not as bad as it seems. And what we do in this presentation is highlight the best and the worst of the major asset classes. And if South African equities is on the worst at 10%, then you know your South African investors would have done well because other asset classes performed even better.
But if you consider what happened in the US with the NASDAQ and the S&P 500, that was way, way in excess of what South African equities gave you. The big issue here, though, is I think, as you made a mention earlier, it depended where you put your money. Definitely the certain shares did incredibly well in this country and certain did awful. But let's start off with the countries themselves. Best performing country, Taiwan, which is interesting, at 34%. Then the USA at 25% and China at 19%. There's a story to all three.
There is a story. There's also some common drivers there. So I think Taiwan, everyone knows that, you know, they are largely driven with the semiconductor industry, which obviously benefit from the global surge in demand for AI. I mean, their biggest share is TSMC, one of the industry behemoths in AI and semiconductors. So that would be a driver for the Taiwanese market. And I think US and China have another thing similar in that they're both at the forefront of innovation and development. So their megatech IT shares obviously fueled their markets. But, you know, China, I would say where the difference is, China's coming off low valuations and there was a bit of a rebound in market ratings there. Well, the US, in our opinion, remains quite, expensive in terms of valuations, but you had a lot of earnings come through. So in today's world, earnings growth is quite scarce. And when the market is in the US is doing what it's doing, that continues to drive its equity market.
And the worst performers, on the one hand, Taiwan and the USA, both very strong free enterprise. The worst performers, Brazil down by 30%, Mexico down by 27%. They both had elections with very strong left-wing parties coming in.
Correct. And then you've got emerging market currencies globally facing significant challenges in 2024. So that impacted their returns. And, you know, what I think the standout has been is the strength of the US dollar as an asset class. And, as the dollar increases, the cost of servicing dollar denominated debts for these emerging countries becomes more and more difficult. In addition, the prospect of increased US tariffs particularly target Chinese imports. You know, there's heightened global trade tensions. So wasn't a good environment for emerging markets. And that's why I said earlier, in that context, South Africa's, both from a currency perspective and also from our markets, you know, didn't actually perform too badly.
Yeah, perhaps there's a little more pragmatism that's coming into the South African story now as well, because it was not rated as socialist ideologically as Brazil and Mexico. Otherwise, you might have seen a very, very different picture to the returns on investments here. And it's quite interesting that, David, stock markets are telling you what's going to happen in the economy, or at least the best guess that everybody who's got a vested interest in that economy is about. So when a stock market falls, as it has in Brazil, that is a signal from investors that they don't like what's coming around the corner.
Correct. Well, that's definitely very, very true. But there's also interest rates that are, you know, at a high. You have those currencies or those countries that export a lot of basic materials to the rest of the world. And you have, when commodities have been under pressure, is also something that bites into their environment and investors' returns.
Okay, on to the best performing asset classes overall. Bitcoin up 120%, gold 27%. So the hedges against uncertainty, definitely the digital one doing better.
Correct. It was a landmark year for Bitcoin. I mean, 120% for, if you asked me a year ago, what I say for an asset class, but maybe Bitcoin is indeed an asset class, and I've been proven wrong. But, you know, they've been driven by institutional adaptation, macroeconomic shifts, and it certainly is a growing role as an investment. So these were the tailwinds that really drove Bitcoin's historic appreciation.
And on to the worst performing currencies, no surprise there. The Brazilian real and the Russian ruble down by 21% each. Argentina's peso still under a lot of pressure, so the Malay effect not quite coming through yet.
I think it was largely in the first half of the year. It's been a bit stable since. But once again, it really is the strength of the US dollar, emerging markets, and tariff talk do not go well for these kind of countries. And they've got hit on both sides. Firstly, obviously, the strength of the US dollar is not good for emerging markets. And secondly, the rhetoric around tariffs and what it means for demand from China and demand for commodities has a big secondary effect.
In South Africa, and this is where we get to the part that, once again, if you'd put your money in the right sectors, you would have done incredibly well. Technology did well in South Africa, up by a third. Consumer discretionary, you mentioned that earlier, interest rate sensitive, in other words, up 29%. Financials had a good year as well, up 22%.
Yeah, I look at this and I think, wow, yeah, technology is up 33%. But I suppose, you know, the reality in the South African market is we've got such a small technology sector and we don't have a lot of innovation. So, you know, our market cap of the technology sector, I think, is probably just a little bit north of 100 billion rands. It's very, very small in comparison to the rest of the market. So, you know, although it's the number one sector, its impact on the broader market is unfortunately not that big. And then, yes, as I said earlier, all interest rate sensitive shares such as financials and consumer discretionary shares such as retail companies, they were fueled by a slightly better environment, no load shedding, and certainly a much more favorable political outcome and its long-term impact on interest rates.
And the worst sectors on the JSE didn't do too badly. Basic materials, the worst of the lot. The mining sector, in other words, down 8.5%. Telecoms, 8%. I guess MTN weighing heavily there with its shenanigans in Iran. And then healthcare, down 4.5%. Any thoughts?
Yeah, I think healthcare was impacted by Aspen, which was down, about 25%, about 20%. So that's a big share in that sector. Yes, as you mentioned, telecommunications, I think Vodacom and MTN are obviously the two big players there. Vodacom was slightly down, but MTN had, as you said, a tough time. And then basic materials, which is really been the one sector that had really been under pressure in South Africa over the last year and a half due to economic growth concerns, particularly in China, which has led to reduced demand for materials. So that weighed heavily on our local bulls.
And individual shares, Mr. Price, 95% higher. Outsurance just came into the top 40 index. So that's 64% better. And then Capitec, there's no stopping Capitec, 58% in the past year. Those three really doing well.
Unbelievable returns. And, you had some stock pickers in South Africa, and I listened to your show and your interview with John Bickard, who really filled their boots in these kind of shares. And, you got rewarded for that kind of exposure. But as I said earlier, as investing is always about looking forward, I think the actual outlook about SA sensitive shares versus maybe your dual listed shares has become a little bit less of a one-way bet. So you certainly prospered in 2024, but maybe 2025 will be a bit different.
And the worst, my goodness, Sasol has just plummeted. It's almost got to a point now where you've got to believe that some bottom has to have been hit. A terrible year for Sibanye-Stillwater, and that's primarily on the palladium price, no doubt. And then even BHP, which was the big Australian, usually a stable source of returns, that's down 24%.
Yeah, all driven by, I suppose Sasol's a bit different. Obviously had a few more own goals and a bit more difficulty in terms of operational performance, but all commodity shares, not all, the majority of commodity shares were under pressure given the environment, given declining commodity prices, and these companies are geared to obviously the commodity price, and when it comes off, you can expect it to impact their earnings and their share prices substantially, and that's certainly what happened last year.
So when we look ahead, 2025?
Yeah, as I said earlier, we were certainly in the camp of investing in South Africa this time last year. I think there are a lot of risks out there. I don't think you need to swing at every pitch. We are more on the conservative camp than believing you have to take a lot of focused risk in this environment. So diversification, whilst it might be a little bit boring to have a period of less risk, I think this is the environment which you'll be rewarded for not sticking your neck out, because there will be some headlines and a lot of volatility, and you've got to know when to invest and when to sit on the sidelines. And I think maybe now just sit on the sidelines a bit more. You've got asset classes that are on fixed interest, providing you with good yields of 4.6% in dollars. Not a bad investment.
What's that song of Kenny Rogers? Know when to hold them, know when to fold them. Well, you won't be folding them if you're a long-term investor. You'll certainly be holding them. You won't be jumping out and buying new cards, though, or new stocks. David Bacher, it seems as though this is a year of back to basics for us. And thank you for taking us through 2024. which was a year where if you found the right ones, you would be smiling. If you, however, didn't, very, very tough circumstances for you. David is the CIO of Corient Capital, and I'm Alec Hogg from biznews.com.